Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com, or you are on the most efficient way to get the show. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and the show pops right up. I'll get right back into the action. It's been about a week and a few days since my last show. It's been a couple weeks because I was busy with the Glory a couple weeks ago. But I definitely get a shout out to Derek, who jumped on me because I had a big gap in my coverage. And he brought it up to me at the Glory event, so I'm back on it. It's funny because I actually was going to put this episode up on this past Tuesday. And then all of a sudden, there was a kickboxing event. So I was like, okay, I'll wait to the end of that. And then on Thursday night, so right after I waited, you know, for the kickboxing card, then I see that I realized I was going to be right before I'll be recruiting and putting the episode right up on the day that it was looking like one was going to do their card. So I was like, man, let me get all my thoughts together. I'll just go ahead and do both cards at once. So we'll go ahead and jump into Glory, and then I'll do some one championship stuff. It's just kind of how things fell into place, but we are off and running with the action. So as I mentioned before, anytime I break down Glory Kickboxing, I work for Glory Kickboxing. I work in their talent ops department. So normally when I do a breakdown of the action, I'm just going to do more the narrative of what I saw in the fight and not so much who's going to go where and what it means historically. I'm just going to kind of talk about it in its place. Every once in a while, you'll hear me say something historic like Cedric Doumbé, for example. When I last talked about his card, Cedric is truly making his resume for when you look back at his era, where he will stand in history. I believe that Cedric Doumbé is in that point. So every once in a while, you'll hear me say something like that, but it's really, really rare. For the most part, I just want to talk about the action, and I'll go ahead and start off with Petr Panarung, Kit Mun Kao, as he can defend his title against Anvar Bonaizarov. I'm sure that Anvar, on the right day, he can absorb the body kick and get his punches going, get into his offense like he normally does. He usually he takes shot, but he can put big shots on afterwards. For whatever reason, this particular time, he wasn't able to do it. Wasn't able to find his moment and get consistent offense. Petr is just, it's different when you go against someone that's elite. Like, you see it and you're like, okay, it's just the left leg. And if you know it's the lone weapon, how do you adjust to it? And Petr, it's not just that he fires a very powerful left kick to the body, but he's got this amazing step back game. So after he scores, he steps back. He knows when he's safe. When you throw a shot, he knows how to tie up, or he knows how to evade. And again, he played with just the kicks and then movement for a long time. Then he started to play with the inside leg kick, and you could see it was kind of having an effect. And then he started to play with the boxing a little bit more. It was as clean a performance as you can get. You know, he's unless he hit shin to shin at some period of time, he probably got out of there injury free. Petr Panarung, or just Petr as we've been calling him lately in the Glory broadcast, he remains your Glory featherweight champion. We move on to the card to Asa Tempao versus Hassam Al-Kassri. The story of this fight for me is the performance for Hassam Al-Kassri. Hassam is a guy who could probably make 130 pounds. Like, he get that low, you know, like it's something that's possible. So he goes against Asa, and Asa's not huge, but he came out, he was committed to his low kicks, he was committed to a flash kick here and there. Hassam really did rise to the occasion, considering in his last fight, you know, he ran again, you know, into who turned out to be a really good fighter in Abraham Vidalis. But like, he went out there and it didn't go as planned in that one, and then he gets Asa, so it's almost like from a tough fight to another tough fight. But this time, man, I'm telling you, his preparation, his performance, his ability to bite down on the mouthpiece, his ability to look for offense, he really did fight what I believe is the best fight of his career. And sometimes when people win, or they win by KO, or they put in a performance and everything worked, they want that to be the one that they're remembered by. But sometimes in history, the fight that you're most remembered by is usually that great back and forth. You know, that time where it's like it makes all the sense in the world for you to not be your best, or you went against tougher opposition. And sometimes in those situations, when a fighter just says, not today, or I'm here to win as well, they put on great fights. And it didn't go his way in the scorecards, but he really did put on a good show. As for Asa Tempao, he's an amazing fighter. Like, he is just so, so gifted and really heavy with his combination to, you know, his boxing flows. His combo to low kick flow was there when he wanted to. After he started to, you know, start feeling good, he had a huge crowd there to support him. You know, it was in Orlando, his backyard. When they announced him, that crowd went nuts. So he went out there and he put on a great show. And he just started to play with special techniques. He played with a spin hook kick, the spin hooking low kick. And that's something that, of course, it's the Andy Hoog one is very, very famous. Most people don't, you know the history of that one. They only know the result of it. In the Andy Hoog one, Bernardo had already taken some low kicks in the tournament. And that's why that low kick was, you know, that spinning hook low kick got him out of there. In this situation, he had a pretty much fresh guy. And after he started playing with some tools and he started to land his spinning back kick to the body, he just figured he'd just keep playing with it. And he kept landing good, consistent offense and good creative offense. And Hassam Helghassery, who's got, you know, some Taekwondo in his background, he started playing with some kicks, axe kicks, some spin kicks. And it just turned into a fight of just good combos, good action. It was kickboxing. To me, it's what I would call high-level kickboxing skill. Now, you look at the guys and where they're ranked, and you say, okay, it can't be high-level if it doesn't have high-level performers, or if the guys aren't top five versus top five. I would disagree. I think two C-class guys can put on a A-class fight, you know what I'm saying? Like, if the skill and the technique is there and so on. And in this situation, you've got, you know, Asa's moving up the ranks, and Hassam, who had two wins before he ran into a stoppage. They put on a performance that shows kickboxing at its best. So you guys will always hear me talk about Jonsi. Jonsi, anytime Jesse Jonsi fights, he gets the right guy in front of him. When his kickboxing offense is going, you are seeing kickboxing in its most beautiful form. Asa Tenpao and Hassam Helghassery put on that level of fight. It really, really was beautiful kickboxing and good work from both. And I remember one of the guys, I think it was one of the ISKA guys, he says, that fight is your example forever. He's talking to someone else. He says, that fight is your example forever of what it looks like to have creative, unique, confident, consistently landing techniques. You know, he says, if you want to know what Glory's talking about when they ask for that, that's what Glory's talking about. I thought it was really cool that he said it. So shout out to both guys, Asa Tenpao with the victory. D'Angelo Marshall gets a victory over Jafar Wilnes. Wilnes has done so great in his career. And there's a period of time where he was, you know, winning, and then he had some big fight opportunities, and then things didn't go as well in those big fight opportunities, and then he wasn't used in Glory for a while. Goes over to China, gets some big wins, comes back to Glory, gets some good wins behind him, gets a loss here and there, but really puts on a good performance. He then gets D'Angelo Marshall. Marshall has all the tools, and sometimes it just happens a little bit later than what people were thinking. Marshall burst on the scene, he wins a tournament, he gets some step-up opportunities, it doesn't go his way, and then if you look at Twitter, the kind of voice or thing that you see consistently is, people wonder if Marshall has it, you know, the mental toughness for this game. Like, that's the number one thing that you'll see if you see people post on the fight. And this fight, it's one of those where Wilnes had, you know, Marshall came out hot, started well, which is something that Jafar is, you know, known for, that slower start. But Marshall came out hot and had a good first round. And then here comes Wilnes in round two. Steady movement, scoring his boxing in space, scoring his low kicks here and there. But really the pressure to break Marshall. It seemed like that was the game. But in round three, you know, between two and three, something that happens in every fighter that desires to be great, there's that time where you just evaluate things and say, okay, I think I want to win this. I think I want to get this round. I think I want to get this fight. I'm not losing today, sort of. And he went out there and he put up more numbers and he put up good, consistent offense in round three. And D'Angelo Marshall is your winner. Biggest win of his career. He's putting it together. He's got a couple wins now. He could be in the title picture. He's got the skill. And after the fight, he asked for the losses that he has. He asked to go against Benjamin Adepuy. And, you know, so I understand it. But, man, he looks the part. He is a huge guy. Very, very talented. As for Wilnes, he's a fun kickboxer, man. Anytime he competes, I'm always down to watch. So, good stuff. And I'm excited for the future of both guys, no matter what it holds. Elvis Gashi gets a victory over Justin Houghton. just 23 seconds in. Agassi comes out on the touch gloves. He rips a big-time inside low kick. They move around for a little bit. There's a circle. And then he rips a big-time body kick. Now, he thought that he got to the liver. The angle that I saw didn't see that it got to the liver. The angle that I saw the kick kind of come up under the pec, high on the ribcage. But no matter where you'd say it happened, it was a devastating kick. And it made this huge echoing sound. And he was, you know, quick victory, 23 seconds for Gashi. You know, Justin, I'm sure he put in a long camp. And you just can't script it. It very much is part of the sport. And everybody wants to go out there and look like a world beater every single time out. But that's just not the case in this game historically. Just wasn't Houghton's night. And he just took a good shot. As for Gashi, you know, it's cool to have him back in glory. You know, he's been out for more than a year. So he's in position to start, you know, being in good fights with elite guys. So I'm excited that he's back in the organization. Big win. Abraham Vidalis gets a victory over Trevor Rajan, 30-27. Shout out to Trevor Rajan, who's always down to fight whoever name you put in front of him. And then even after this fight, he asked for Bailey Sugden. Like, mentally, he wants to fight the best guys. Vidalis has got all the kickboxing tools to really make a surge to the top. He's a young guy, you know. He's, you know, under 25, and he's got good combos, good combination flow. He plays a combination of body kick flow, and then he puts low kicks in there. But he's most consistently, before he got to glory, when I first looked at his video, I saw how many times he went hands to body kick. And I was like, man, this is going to be a fun kid for a long time. He came out, two KOs back-to-back. This one, Trevor Rajan, big, strong, muscular guy, made him work. And Rajan scored some shots here and there. Just Vidalis was more consistent with his scoring and with his kickboxing flow. Abraham Vidalis can fight. So good stuff by Vidalis and good stuff by Rajan. Kevin Van Arnstrand gets a victory over Sahir Adamchuk. If you've ever seen Kevin fight, he has two rhythms. He has a movement rhythm where he's able to find his offense in space and his spinning techniques. And then he has a crowd you, kind of keep you from getting your offense back, where he'll fall and find himself in clinch positions and so on. You know, I thought that this fight was one of the better fights from Adamchuk. He really didn't get into clinching as much. He played with kickboxing and boxing and space and combos. He looked to rip low kicks. He did some good things. There was a controversial moment in the third round where Kevin Van Oostrand did like a jumping technique in his direction, and Adamchuk did a teep. And a teep landed on the body, and then Van Oostrand went down from it, saying that the shot got him in the groin. And then they had the big screen kind of show replay of it, and the replay did not have Adamchuk scoring the shot to the groin. It had him scoring it to the body when Van Oostrand was in the air. So, you know, it's one of those, on Twitter you could see a lot of people saying they disagreed with it. They thought that, you know, it was missed. They thought that it should be a TKO or a KO victory for Adamchuk. And it just was a weird, weird moment in the fight. After, you know, the fight was over with, a lot of people felt like the judges and the ref were moving in a way that was biased towards Adamchuk. Now I'm just giving you guys what I read off of Twitter. This is just, I want to give you a pulse of what was said. I'm never going to rob you guys of what was experienced, when people were looking at this fight. Being there ringside, I did think that this shot landed clean, but I also understand the difficulties of being a ref, and I could see how they might have thought that was in the groin, and that's really all it takes to want to stop one of those moments. So Kevin Arshan gets the win. Adamchuk really did perform well. His boxing was really good. He put on some good kickboxing, so good stuff by both guys. Rebecca Irwin gets a victory over Taylor Jenkins. Jenkins took the fight on short notice. You know, she's tough. She bit down the mouthpiece. Moved forward, tried to throw her wide shots and create flurries. Just Irwin's footwork was just too good. That was really the story of the fight. She kept looking for a single kick, switch kick to the body, kick to the head. She'd do a low kick here and there, play with the boxing here and there. But really, it was more about range control and then circling, so that when Jenkins got into her big-time offensive flurries, there was nothing there to hit. So Irwin wins, going to 2-0 as, you know, in glory now, and just continuing to climb the ranks. So good stuff for Rebecca. Peter Stanenyk gets a victory over Vince McGinnis. Stanenyk was able to score a right hook in the first round. After the right hook scored, he moved on to, I guess what we would say, he's looking for big shots. And it kept him from finding the right shot. And I thought that in round two, Vince got his counter game going. He wasn't scoring the hardest shots, but he was scoring a lot. And he was touching him well, and he was able to find the counter really well. He would fire a right hand after the southpaw petered through his left hand. And I actually thought there was a really good chance he won round one, or round two for Vince. And then Stanenek, who also had the 10-8 first round because he dropped him, was able to score more and score better in the third. So, you know, Vince, definitely, I like the mentality, the biting down, the game planning, the let's look for the counter. He fought well in round three. It just didn't go his way, you know. And Stanenek is a talent. You know, he's now undefeated. He's still undefeated. Now 2-0 in glory. We will see what comes from him in the future. Ross Levine comes out and gets a big-time head kick over Thomas Diagne. It's one of those nights where Thomas, he just didn't get the opportunity to show the skill that he has. And it's just 43 seconds in, and he put in the camp, and he hadn't, you know, used him, you know, since last year. Just because the opportunities and the right opponent didn't come up. We had a good opportunity. We had the right opponent. Levine, very, very talented. Got the karate background, but really plays, you know, kickboxing well. Came out, I mean, the quickness and the speed of that high kick, that high left leg was just absolutely beautiful. So, shout out to Russell Levine. That's how you make a statement in your debut. Kimon Diop gets victory over John Morehouse. Kimon was just bigger throughout, better throughout. Heavy with the 1-2s and the 3-2s. Heavy with the single low kick. Morehouse just, you know, and he had a tough weight cut too. He's had better days, and he's really good at pressing and finding an offense when he pushes the pace. It just didn't go his way, and that's the sport they're in. Kimon Diop gets the victory, and good stuff by him. Nick Chastain gets a victory over Javonis Ross. First of all, shout out to Javonis Ross. He took this fight on super short notice without the biggest kickboxing resume. He just had some fights, but mostly known for MMA. He is a confident guy. He sells himself. He's very, very much a at home speaking and doing interviews. He really did do us as kickboxing fans, he did do us a good service by going out there, fighting tough, and fighting back. Because he took a lot of low kicks early from Nick Chastain, who was just ready to just kill anybody who got in there because he, you know, had fights fall through on him, and he just was ready to get in there. That was their words to me. He's ready to kill anybody, whoever he put in there. That's what his camp said. Ross, great, great person to have against because Ross was ready to kill anyone. You know, like he... He had the right mentality. Just didn't find the moment where he can get the offense going. This is kind of how this game is. And he took the low kicks and got hurt early. But he was not about to stop. Second round, he throws a low kick. Nick Chastain checks the low kick. Ross is injured after the check. And then he goes down. And that's the fight. I got a message from his manager afterwards that it was a severe ankle sprain, which I'm grateful for because at first I thought it was going to be some broken bones. So glad that Ross is, you know, even though he didn't get the victory, he definitely represented himself well in the interviews. And I pray for a speedy recovery. I'm excited to see you one more time with the full camp, you know. So down the road, we'll see you again, Ross. Nick Chastain, second glory win. Talented kid. Just got to keep him active. Good stuff, Nick. And the first fight on the card was Taylor Crawl versus Paul Banasiak. Crawl came out round one. Went his way, was able to score, good offense, he's good quickness to him, good movement, and then a Teep scored, it didn't look like it was too low, but like Crawl had a response to it, and after that, the ref had been getting on Banasiak because of where he'd been scoring. Round two, Banasiak had got his flow, like Crawl took number one clear. Banasiak got going in round two, and the moment that he got into a clinch, he threw a knee. Another one, it's a tough job, because the replay and the view that I had the knee scored clean. But the ref and the view that he has, and it's such a difficult job, he did not have it. He called it, and he's like, this is the second time it happened. So he took a point, which meant Banasiak had to really, really turn it on. Mnázek then went on to win the rest of the second round, and then round three was all survival for Kral. Mnázek had figured him out. He was scoring with body kicks, with knees, with shots. Kral just needed to not go down, and he was going to get himself to a decision because he had the 10-8 in his favor thanks to the point being taken. The point being taken. So Kral was able to survive, but Mnázek was not able to get the win, but he fought extremely well, and Mandy turned it up in that third round. Kral, clearly, I'm sure he's disappointed in. You know, he wanted to have the kind of performance that the crowd would be talking about, but getting your hand raised means a lot in this business, especially when you see the paycheck. So congratulations to him. Good stuff in Orlando. It really was an entertaining card, and it was a lot of fun, and man, I was just grateful for all the athletes that put in that great work, and you know, definitely hope to see more in future from a lot of those athletes. So we're gonna ahead and move on to one championship, and I mentioned it before, so let me tell you the full of what now looks like the final chapter of Petrosian Pech Morakot. So the beginning of the story is simple. There is a tournament, an 8-man tournament. The tournament looks perfectly set up for Yotes and Clyde to meet Petrosian. Yotes and Clyde had pretty much already beaten all the guys in his bracket. Petrosian had pretty much beaten all the guys in his bracket. So it's all set up for these two to meet for $1 million in the final. Then, upsets happen. Petrosian loses. Before Petrosian loses, I can't remember the order of it, but the number one thing was, we had Petrosian and Yotes and Clyde take losses in the tournament. So the problem that everybody had with, or the weird thing was, all of a sudden, 2 days later, Petrosian posts, and he says, I want to thank the people, the good people at ONE for revisiting it. They said that the knee rule, or the hold clinch rule, was violated several times, and that he is back in the tournament. And that Pech Morakot, he didn't mention a rematch at that time. He just said he's back in the tournament and he wanted to thank them. So the moment anybody in the world hears this, they think, all right, that's trash. Like, where did that come from? Whose logic is that? That's the decision that we're going to make. Clearly, it looks like the two alphas that you wanted to take and win this tournament have lost. So now you're trying to figure out a way to get them back in the tournament. It should be noted, as I mentioned before, I thought Petrosian won. I thought he clearly won at least two rounds of the three in their fight. That was just my personal view, but that's what came out. Because of this clinch violation, that's what came out. The counter to that is Pech Morakot's team then put out a video, and they have a timer for every time that they're in the clinch. Not one time did they violate the clinch terms. Like, they didn't do it one time, literally not one time. Did they go over the 3-second limit or 5 seconds or whatever was discussed and agreed upon? They did a good job of letting them be free. So everybody was upset about it. Everybody's like, this, you know, himself. Some people do some videos. Like, everybody was upset about it. Then, flash forward, the owner, the president of ONE then comes out and he makes a statement and he says, hey, everybody misunderstood this. We're not sure where you guys got the, this is about the knee or the clinch rule. We just say that Pech Morakot won under Muay Thai rules, and that if it was kickboxing K1 rules, that Petrosian won. So we have to do the fight over so that the proper scoring can be done. So for all of us watching this, everybody, you know, kind of the Twitter world, the whole world, somebody even made fun of me for it a little bit. They seem to be under the impression that this is not a very good answer, it's not very good reasoning, and the only thing that we're really hearing is you're saying we want to do over with Petrosian. That's the feel that people got. In particular, when he said he didn't know where people got the answer or the thinking it's about the clinch. He didn't know that where people got that from. He only knew that the real reason for it was because of the way the fight was scored by the judges. So here is my problem with that. All of it is my problem with that. The first things first, they've been judging for a while, and that wasn't the only fight on the card. So they've been judging it for kickboxing the whole time. Like, that wasn't new, you know what I'm saying? The way they did that, they knew what they were doing. I think those guys were positioned. They knew the response that they were doing. I think that what happened, and just my personal opinion, and a lot of people kind of said it, it seems to us that you needed to get that star power back into the tournament, so then you made this deal. Petch Morcott, his team, then pulled him from the tournament. This is something that I've experienced before. The moment he was pulled from the tournament, I knew that they were going to do the rematch for sure, but I knew that the money would go way up. I watched Bukau fight Jiawen Parr in Jamaica, Champions versus Champions. And on the weigh-ins, they had agreed on 71 kgs. For those who know Jiawen Parr, 71 kgs is a tough, tough mountain to climb. He is difficult for him to get down that low. Anyways, it is, oh, for those of you who are wondering, that's like 158, something like that, you know, for the translation. 158, 150, you know, like, it's lower. So I would even go as far as to say 156 and a half, not 58. I'd say 156 and a half. So, our point two. Anyways, he makes it, and then as soon as he makes weight, they look over at our direction. They actually looked in my direction because I was standing right next to Petrosian and Pormuk at the time. And then he goes, it's your turn to get on the scale. And then Bukaj is chilling. He looks off. And then all of a sudden, the coach for, all of a sudden, Pormuk, the owner, coach, or owner, manager of Bukau back in the days, he then says the sentence, 70 kgs. We agreed on 70, which is not true at all. So they said they weren't going to fight. John Wayne said, this is trash, something like that, whatever. They walk away. Ernesto Hoos then comes over to me and he says, yeah, this is about money. This is the ties they're going to do. They're going to go talk about something. He's going to, you know, be fine with the new terms and he's going to come back and get on scale. Sure enough, exactly what happened. They were upset for a little bit. The manager talked to the owner for a little bit, comes back. Everything's worked out. They're going to fight. I looked at that situation the same way that I looked at this situation. It seems like people are a decision was made where people are like, I'm not really the biggest fan of this as a group, but this was agreed upon. And then the Thai guy's upset. It's like, I don't want to do this. I'm not fighting. And then there was a negotiation between Petch and his team. And one FC or one championship. Next thing you know, he's fighting. So it's just one of those things that I'm good to laugh at it now. Like it's okay for me to laugh at. But the big thing about it is, can you understand how a audience on the outside looking in would be like, this is because they lost the star power from the tournament. It is the danger of doing tournaments, but this is the reason why. So, anyways, the chapter comes to an end. You know, no matter how you feel, whether you feel one championship was doing this on purpose or not, they agreed on $32,000, or $1 million baht. They probably could have got more, but that's what they agreed for Petch to get back into the tournament, so he made way more money. And he ends up losing yesterday to Petrosian, and that chapter is finally over. Petrosian will move on to probably win this tournament with very little resistance. The fun fight that everybody wanted was Yotsen Klai, but he was rightfully stopped the right way. Just made some mistakes. Chin was high. Just didn't go his way. That's just kind of how this game is. So we return to the tournament in a few months or a few weeks, if I remember correctly, and Petrosian is back in that field. He will be going against Joe Nadawat in his next round. Other fights on this card I want to talk about. Hiroki Akimoto gets a victory over Kenny Tse. That's good stuff there, kickboxing. Janet Todd gets a victory over Kai Ting Shuang of my majority decision. I'm all about Janet Todd. Janet Todd goes out there, fights Stamp for the title, doesn't go her way, continues to fight, continues to work, continues to get better. And, you know, you look at her record and resume, you know, at this stage of the game, like you look at that, you look at where she is, and you're thinking, okay, she's going to get some fights and get another chance at Stamp down the road. But they are keeping her active. She's working hard. She's competing. And she had that good amateur background. She went right into this tournament. She's beating good girls. So So good for her, good for the decision making, good for that team. They really did put themselves in a spot where they can continue to move her, because she's a talented girl and she's got good style, and I do think that she can give Stamp some trouble. So shout out to Janet Todd and her victory. Other fights, Mohammed bin Momad gets a victory over Saiful. I believe his name is Saiful Merican. So good stuff there. Full Rules Muay Thai. Sorgra Petchendi gets a victory over George Mann by split decision. And then Josh Tona gets a victory over Yoshihisa Morimoto by unanimous decision. So definitely some solid stuff that came from that one championship card. And again, we want to continue to cultivate and move high-level fighters, you know, to get opportunities like that. So when that night, you know, came about, you know, when the card was put together, and, you know, when you look at the kind of undercards or whatever, clearly there's got to be a system for people to get a better idea of who's who. But I do think that there's some talented fighters. Like, there really are some talented fighters out there in the kickboxing world. We just got to be paying attention to them, and we've got to do our best to get those athletes competing and winning on a high level, because, you know, stuff like what you're seeing from Janet Todd, she really has done some cool stuff. So I'm glad she got the victory, and I'm excited for what's coming next for a lot of those athletes. Going to go ahead and go to some news and notes. It's been officially announced. Badr Hari and Rico Verheerven will do it again. It's going to be in this, you know, we always joke about it, but it's going to be in December. On what we used to officially call K1 World Grand Prix weekend, usually the second weekend in December. I believe we're the third weekend for this one. And everybody's excited. Everybody's excited about it, really. He signed a 3-year deal earlier this year, and he's working out his suspension for his drug violation. But Badr Hari is still the biggest star in kickboxing. If he goes to Japan, people are going to want to show up and watch him. He fights in anywhere in Europe, in particular, Germany, Holland, places where the Moroccans can get to him, France. He's a huge deal. He's the biggest international draw probably in the game. The kid can fight and the kid can draw. I don't know if this is going to be 3 minutes again, or excuse me, if this is going to be 3 rounds again or 5. All I know is he is that deal. He's such a talented guy. And, you know, everybody, I would say, in the fight game, win, lose, or draw, they want Badr competing. You know, I'm not saying you can make your argument for what you want him to be or who you feel is, all that, you know, you can make your argument. The thing that I think most people care about with Badr Hari is this guy competing on a regular basis? Because he is a talent, and the more he fights, the happier people are. And that's kind of all we want. You know, we just want elite kickboxers to continue to put on good performances and more eyes to be drawn to the sport. Because he's good, man. He's really, really good. And it breaks my heart sometimes when I see how people will respond and, you know, kind of wish him ill because it didn't go his way. And there have been some bogus things around his career for sure. But definitely disappointed when he's got those big gaps. But he's back now, and he is training hard, and the body's getting better. So I'm excited to see from future. I had a video sent to me, and I mean, I'm laughing it off, but someone showed me a video of a guy who tries a headbutt at a fighter's, you know, chest while elbow's coming at him. They don't have gloves on, and people were sending to me, or it was popping up on my Facebook wall. That kind of stuff usually does not impress me. What I mean by it, it's just I'm more cringe when I see that kind of stuff start floating around Facebook and start floating around my Twitter wall than I do to celebrate it, because I don't want anybody to look ill of the sport. And seeing a guy try a headbutt and miss, by the way, as his opponent leaned and got out of the way, it's not a good look. So just me personally, I desire it to be different, but I don't run this game. I just don't. It's some good fight. You know, some good fight action. Sorry, I lost. I just had something in my notes and I lost it. Oh, another note thing that popped up is Gabriel Varga fought MMA last night. Now, clearly that's heartbreaking and not surprising. And the reason why I say that is because he has been a talent for a long time. And I think when you look at him and you look at, who are we forgetting about? We're looking at not Kevin Ross. He seems like he's still committed to just being a kickboxer, a full rules Muay Thai. He doesn't look like he's into MMA. But Raymond Daniels also moved to MMA. And I don't know if they sat down and told those guys that, hey, look, we're probably not going to do kickboxing as much, but we'll pay you a lot of money and give you some manageable guys if you come do some MMA for us. I wonder if that conversation happened. I really do. Now, I don't know if it did. I do wonder if that's what happened. But anyways, I think I am going to wrap the show up there. I'll be back next week, definitely with some more news and some more results. I think I'm going to do some things. I put together a fight card once because I was talking about if I wanted to do an old versus new card, what would it look like? And I put that card together. So I might do that for you guys next week. Thanks so much for the people who are listening. And if I have forgotten something over the last couple weeks, just go ahead and send me a message, and I'll be sure to go revisit that card and break it down. But I am busy, you know, so sometimes when I do my fight cards or I work a fight week or something like that, I just don't have the time to get to the cards as much. But I'm going to try to be on my game for the rest of the year. Derek done jumped on me, so I'm going to be on my game for the rest of the, at least give me the summer to try to guarantee 1 week I'll have something up. So hold me to it. On Wednesday next week, you guys will have a podcast representing that week. So, God bless. Thanks for listening. Peace, everyone. And keep watching High Level Kickboxing and supporting the sport. Peace.